This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 259.
Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Audiobooks have a way of changing your running routine forever. It's amazing how they can take your mind somewhere else, and before you know it, the miles have flown by. So for a limited time, get $10 off your first one over $10 by visiting g.co/play/MTA. That's g.co/play/MTA. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play.
This podcast is brought to you by NewKneeShop.com. Don't let knee pain keep you from completing your long runs, or worse, sideline you altogether. An innovative new product called New Knee can help. It's designed specifically to relieve that dreaded runner's knee pain. Available today at NewKneeShop.com. That's NewKneeShop.com. And use code MTA25 for a 25% discount.
Welcome to the MTA podcast, where we empower you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we tell you how to go from couch to marathon. Plus, we talk with a runner from California who went from weighing 400 pounds to running his first marathon. And just a reminder, you can go through our A to Z system inside the academy and get marathon ready. Find out how to join when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So, Angie, yesterday I went on a 18-mile long run, staggered out there in the middle of the day when the heat and humidity was in its full fury.
Why did you do that? I went out earlier in the morning to run, made it 2 miles and thought, nope, too humid, and came back and finished on the treadmill.
I know. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm just not much of a morning runner. So I was looking at my run, my stats, because I run with a Apple Watch, and I went just under 18 miles. It took 4 hours, 15 minutes, and 43 seconds. I gained 2,470 feet of elevation. The weather was 87 degrees with 66% humidity.
Yuck.
Everyone needs to have an appreciation for just how much harder it is to run in heat and humidity. I'm always reminded of that, you know, every summer. And thankfully, we spent most of the summer out west, where it's very dry. But now, yes, I'm reminded just how much energy it zaps from you, because your sweat can't evaporate, and it's harder to regulate your body temperature in the humidity.
Yeah, it definitely is. I've got my 20-miler this weekend preparing for the Loch Ness Marathon, and I'm hoping for a cooler day, and we'll definitely get an earlier start than you did.
Well, that would be smart. But when I say everyone needs an appreciation for how much harder heat and humidity makes it, I say that because we do hear from people who run a race on a hot day, and then they run slower, but then they get mad and feel like there was something wrong with their training, or they're mad at themselves and they feel like they didn't give it their all because they didn't run the time that they wanted to run. And we're like, wait, look how hot it was, you know? Unless you're like really heat adapted, like some runners are, you got to just keep in mind how much that is going to slow you down, especially humidity. I found myself yesterday taking a lot of walk breaks because I just felt like my core temperature was rising and my heart rate was rising. I just have to stop and let it all kind of return back to normal and then start running again.
And for people who live in a climate that gets really warm over the summer months, it's actually very challenging to train for a fall marathon because you are doing a significant amount of your long runs in the heat and possibly the humidity. So training through the summer is not for wimps.
So shout out to everyone who deals with summer training and has to run in those kind of temperatures. Mad respect for you guys. Angie mentioned that she's doing the Loch Ness Marathon in Scotland. That's going to be next month. And I've got a marathon next month as well. I kind of mentioned it briefly at the end of the last episode, but I'm going to be doing the Jungfrau Marathon in Switzerland. It starts in Interlaken, and then you kind of run up, just pretty much up to the mountain. And all the pictures I've seen of it, people are just walking up it with like their hands on their knees.
Sounds like it'll be a real challenge. So tell us, why did you sign up for this?
Well, other than the fact that it's gorgeous and I've always wanted to visit the Swiss Alps, I've got a philosophy that once a year I need to do something that scares me, you know, like just outside of my comfort zone. And marathons always are outside of my comfort zone in some way. But this one is going to be even more tough because of all the ascent that I have to do. So that's what's going on with us. Angie, what's happening out there in MTA land recently?
Well, we've got lots of hardworking members in the academy, and we'd like to give shout outs to some of them. Joe says, I'm on an amazing runner's high right now. I ran the Wausau Half Marathon this morning, a home race for me that I've done twice before. My C goal was to finish, B goal was sub 2 hours, and A goal was to get a course PR. I'm happy to say I not only got all three, but ran my fastest half marathon since 2013 and came within 57 seconds of my PR. I tried really hard to see if I could hang on to get that elusive sub 150, but was delighted with a 151 finish. Plus, the finisher's medal was massive. Final icing on the cake was coming in third in my age group. Gosh, this feels good.
Well, sounds like it was an epic day for Joe, right? And you gotta love that amazing runner's high.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we run, for the endorphins.
That's right.
Free drugs.
And I thought it was smart for her to have, you know, multi-layered goals, because sometimes, especially during summer marathons, you don't know what the temperatures, the conditions are going to be like. And so,
exactly.
You know, she had lots of different things that she wanted to accomplish out there, and it's wonderful to see she got all three. Tamara says, goal accomplished. I decided to run my first marathon this year, but got so caught up in the buzz that I ended up running three full marathons within the past 6 weeks. I also managed to shave 16 minutes off my time for my first marathon in July when I crossed the finish line at the Sunshine Coast Marathon last Sunday in 4 hours and 32 minutes, my new personal best. I have certainly caught the marathon bug and look forward to setting and conquering new goals. I'm definitely keen to give an ultra a go and will keep running marathons. Big thanks to you both and all the members of MTA who have inspired me and taught me so much about running.
Wow. Tamara has released the Kraken and there's no putting it back.
Which is usually the case.
That's great.
And finally, this note comes from John. He says, hi, Angie and Trevor. My story is pretty typical. I wanted to get fit and lose some weight as I turned 50. So I started with a Couch to 5K app, and I can still remember how exhausted I was after those first short 30-minute treadmill workouts. In just over a year, I went from being a couch potato to being a marathoner. Following sage advice from the podcast, training smart with my local running club, and with encouragement from family and friends, made the marathon journey possible, and I completed the Rock and Roll Marathon in DC as my first marathon. The first 13.1 felt pretty good. I stuck to the plan and didn't go out too fast. In the later miles, I went back to your podcast archives, and during this time, I was shocked to catch up and pass the 4:30 pacer and finished up in 4 hours and 25 minutes. I proved your tagline, run a marathon and change your life. On to the next adventure.
All right. Thank you for that nice note, John. That is what we love to hear. Congrats on finishing your first marathon and undergoing that amazing journey that you've been on. And here's to a great future of running for you. And that definitely dovetails nicely with the theme of this episode. We're talking about how to go from couch to marathon. We love to hear from folks that have done that. We love to help first-time marathoners. And it's been a while since we've kind of done, you know, nuts and bolts kind of episode that will be really helpful to people like John, you know, the last shout out you read.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it's good just to go back to basics.
Yeah, that's right. So even if you have run numerous races, you'll probably still pick up some tips and wisdom and inspiration in this episode. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Well on my way, well on my way. So I remember not too long ago, I was a desk potato. I won't say couch potato. I did like physical activity, but I had a job that required me to do a lot of sitting. So I was living a pretty sedentary life and was putting on the pounds. Growing up, I liked sports that involved hand-eye coordination and balance. I was always pretty good at those kind of sports. But one thing I knew is that I hated to run. Like, you don't run just for fun, right? So I remember doing a Couch to 5K program. Angie, you actually designed it for me. And it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. I know it's been 8 years now, but actually we had not too long after that, we started the podcast and I was a total newbie. So in this episode, Angie's going to share 10 tips to successfully take you from couch or desk to marathon. And these are all things that do come from questions that we get, whether it's via email or just people that we meet in person.
Yeah, well, there's definitely some common pitfalls that can derail runners from safely reaching their marathon goal, which is what we encourage people to do. There's always ways to get it done and get injured along the way.
Yeah, if you're stubborn enough, you can probably limp through your first marathon, having not trained. Maybe you're fit from other sports, but it's not going to be very fun. And we've actually met other athletes, people that are really fit, that just jumped into a marathon and it beat them up bad. And because it's a different kind of fitness needed to be an endurance runner.
Yeah, my brother tells a story of a coworker who was really fit in another sport and, you know, jumped into a marathon without any training. And, you know, elderly people were passing him and, you know, women with strollers, and it was very demoralizing. So we want people to have the best possible experience, and having a few tips related to gear and training and also having the right mindset is really important. The first thing we'll start out with is talking about gear, because obviously running gear is a probably multi-billion dollar industry, but you don't need all the gear. You just need the right gear for you. So when it comes to buying a pair of running shoes, the pair that your friend has may not work for you. You don't want to go out and buy the fanciest pair you can find, or the most expensive ones, or the cheapest ones, or the ones that look the most attractive. I know when I first started running, when I was in my early 20s, I would just buy the shoes according to like the color scheme, not really worrying about how they felt on my feet, which probably explains a lot. So it's all about comfort and fit when it comes to your trainers. You should have plenty of room in the toe box and at least a half inch of space between your longest toe and the end of the shoe. And I totally didn't realize this when I trained for my first marathon. I think I wore two smaller running shoes for the first couple of years. And, you know, who knew that your feet aren't supposed to go numb and that your toes aren't supposed to feel continually battered when you run? It was like a revelation.
Didn't you have a friend you were on a run with not too long ago? She said that her feet go numb when she runs.
Yeah, I still run into people all the time who don't realize. And she just bought a new pair of shoes. So she thought, well, I guess, you know, these are supposed to be good shoes for me. And I said, no, take those babies back. You either need a bigger size or a different model or something. It's also wise to shoe shop in the later part of the day because your feet have swollen some by that point. And obviously when you're running, your feet are going to swell some. So you don't want a pair of shoes that starts feeling too tight. And we typically recommend that if you've never done so before, to go to a specialty running store and have your feet and gait evaluated by a professional, because every pair of feet are different and every person's running gait is unique. So they should be able to give you two or three, four models to try. And then you try them on, walk around the store. Some running stores allow you to run up and down the sidewalk a bit in them to really get a good feel. And many have a very generous return policy. Like within 30 days, if they're not working for you, you can bring them back. That's very wise when you're kind of just dipping your toe into the waters of finding a good marathon shoe. A good fitting pair of running shoes is going to prevent some of the possible injuries that come from the wrong shoes, and it's going to greatly increase your comfort while running, which there's going to be other discomforts while you run, and hopefully your feet are not one of them because you chose wrong shoes.
And while you're at it, get some good socks.
Yes, exactly. You'll probably find that not just any old pair of socks is going to work for long runs. For example, fabric like cotton doesn't breathe very well, and it's going to cause heat to build up inside your socks. So if you have this heat buildup combined with friction, this can leave you some nasty blisters and have you hobbling around for days. And some people are more blister prone than others. Basically, you want a sock that's made out of technical fabrics like the acrylics, polyester, bamboo, and the wool blends. And some of our favorite go-to brands include Bombas. I really like Injinji toe socks, Balegas. There are many good brands out there, and you don't have to spend a lot of money on running socks at first, but just make sure you get something that's comfortable and doesn't cause any skin issues.
And I still get blisters. I mean, I've been doing this a while now, but I was running on a really hot day in Montana. I actually ran 18 miles out there, gained a lot of elevation, but it still wasn't as hard as my run yesterday in the humidity. But anyway, my feet got really hot because I was just in the sun for like 4 hours and I got this nasty blister. It happens, but you know what I do now is I will put Body Glide on the bottom of my feet. I just forgot to do it that day. Because blisters come from friction, right? So if you put Body Glide down there.
Or some other kind of anti-chafing ointment.
So yeah, if you're blister prone, try that. But I digress. Angie, let's talk about good running clothes, because believe it or not, 1 year when I was at the Marine Corps Marathon, I saw a dude running in jeans and like a flannel shirt.
I wonder if someone bet him that he couldn't run in jeans and a flannel shirt or something. Yeah, when it comes to shorter runs, you can usually keep it fairly simple and just wear things that are comfortable for you to work out in. The exception for women is getting a sports bra with maximum support. You really want comfort and support with your sports bra. But as you continue the amount of time that you run, you're going to find that certain cuts of running clothes, certain fabrics and styles are more comfortable, and others will leave you swearing that you'll never wear that garment again for a long run. I have clothes that never leave the house for a long run, and I can wear them fine for short runs. So you just kind of end up figuring that over time. But I definitely recommend slowly investing in a wardrobe of running clothes made of technical fabrics. Because if you sweat at all, you're going to be unpleasantly weighed down again by things like cotton or anything with an obvious seam that can cause chafing. In general, you want garments that fit well, that don't have a ton of extra fabric, and don't cause chafing. Because that fabric rubbing against your skin and skin rubbing against other skin can cause the uncomfortable condition known as chafing, which I'm unfortunately very familiar with. So using Body Glide or other anti-chafing products anywhere you suspect that chafing may occur can help prevent this issue. And it usually only takes a few runs before you find out any potential chafing locations.
I think everyone needs to learn about chafing firsthand. You know, you can hear us talk about it, but until you've experienced it, you're just missing out.
So special.
Sometimes you can learn by experience or learn by example.
Right. It's like when you have chafing out on a run, it's like being in the frying pan and then taking a shower and having the water hit that area. It's like being thrown into the fire.
I know it.
Another piece of gear that's really helpful to have is some sort of GPS tracking. It can be really helpful to track your distance and time and maybe other stats that you're interested in using either a GPS watch or your phone with a tracking app. And if you've been running long enough, you probably remember back in the days before GPS, before the days when focusing on all these metrics took over. So, you know, some people are still pretty old school. When I was training for my first marathon, I just had a basic stopwatch. And I drove my running routes in my car to estimate the distance.
Which is probably not very accurate.
Yeah, exactly. It worked, but I didn't have very much flexibility with my route. So having an app or a GPS watch makes it so much easier. Some of those popular apps include things like MapMyRun, RunKeeper, Runtastic, Strava, Edmondo, Nike Plus. And there's a lot of popular GPS watches, including, well, Trevor, you use the Apple Watch.
Yep, I had a Garmin Forerunner, I forget what it was.
Something they no longer make.
Yeah, which was like this huge computer on my wrist. It worked fine. Yeah, it was a relatively inexpensive running watch, good starter watch.
Yeah, I run with a Garmin and, you know, find them to be pretty reliable. Plus, they have excellent customer service, which is helpful.
The only reason why I run with the Apple Watch is I like the ability to shuffle through songs and check my email and get messages, of course. Then I can actually reply. Just don't have to dig my phone out at all. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, very handy.
Like yesterday, after I'd been out there for like 3.5 hours, you texted me and said, "Are you okay?" And of course, my hands are so sweaty that I don't even want to touch my phone. You probably couldn't even unlock the screen anyway if I wanted to. So just on my watch, I just tapped and I could send you a little thumbs up. And then you knew I was okay, right, Angie?
That's right. Didn't have to send out the Calvary.
Were you were getting ready to come look for me or what?
No, I thought you were going to go 12 miles.
Okay.
And when you didn't come back, after 3 hours, I was thinking, okay, this is not normal.
Well, I appreciate you checking on me.
You're welcome. Anyway, GPS watches come in a variety of price points, usually associated with how many features you want. And there are some good blogs out there that compare the differences between them. So, you know, at some point you will want to invest in a GPS app or watch that you can use to track your distance, time, and heart rate or any other metric that you want.
All right, so let's talk about number two, running form. These are just good things to nail down after you get the right pair of shoes and you head out the door for a run. There are some things to keep in mind.
Yes, running form can either make or break your experience as a long-distance runner. Because if you have form issues or biomechanical errors, that is going to be compounded over time and actually can lead to injuries or sorenesses that you don't need to have. So while no person has the exact same running form, just due to how our bodies are built differently, there are some general principles that can really save you energy and help you be more efficient and prevent injuries. So here are some of the things that you should focus on. The first thing is to run tall. You want to keep your head up and your eyes looking straight ahead. And you may notice as you get tired that your gaze starts to drop down as your head kind of bows forward. So really keep an effort every mile or so to kind of run through some posture checks. You know, think run tall, keep your head up, keep your gaze in front of you. And keeping your gaze in front of you is going to help you navigate any potential issues that are coming up ahead of you on the road. The second thing is to keep your torso up, your shoulders relaxed, your arms bent comfortably by your sides, so that your hands should not cross the midline of your body while you're running. You want your hands to be relaxed and not clenched. So if you feel like you're holding a lot of tension in your hands, that's going to kind of flow all the way up to your arms and your shoulders. So you really want to just keep your hands relaxed, like maybe you're holding a potato chip in your hands, and make sure your arms swing along the sides of your bodies. You don't want them crossing over your midline. Next, the body should lean slightly forward from ankles to shoulders. So you don't want to be bent from the waist. You don't want to have your head bent forward. You just want that slight lean. Like if you didn't take the next step, then you would just fall forward on your face.
Let gravity do the work for you.
That's right. And your landing foot should be just under your hips, which is your center of gravity. A lot of people end up overstriding. Their landing foot is too far out in front of the body, and that kind of creates a braking motion, and it also can lead to a lot of issues further up your kinetic chain. So try to keep your steps short, land under your center of gravity, and then focus on those short, quick steps so that you're not overstriding.
And one of our most popular episodes from last year was an interview with Jonathan Beverly about running form. He wrote a book called Your Best Stride. So definitely go back and listen to that. It's still out there live in the podcast feed if you're interested in learning more about running form. Third, we want to talk about running defensively, or we could say personal safety.
Yeah, I think this kind of incorporates some health issues and also being a defensive runner. The first thing that you should do is to make sure that you're cleared for physical activity by your healthcare provider before you train for a marathon. Chronic issues like heart or lung problems can need specialized attention. And also, if you ever experience unusual shortness of breath, if you have arm or neck tightness, especially on the left side, if you ever have numbness, nausea, or a cold sweat, you need to call 911 immediately. These are signs of a heart attack and should not be ignored. So don't just think that's because you're exercising and this is a new thing. Really be aware of what's normal for your body. And fortunately, runners have very low rates of heart disease, but we also need to be aware of our own personal health. And at some point during your running or marathon journey, you'll probably have at least one non-running acquaintance point out all the cases of people who have died while running. Somehow they feel like it's a public service to do that. Another thing you'll run into is people predicting that you'll someday need a hip or knee replacement. Very kind to them. But statistically, runners don't have higher rates of osteoarthritis than non-runners, and keeping your weight in check is going to make for healthier joints. Runners also have a smaller chance of heart disease and type 2 diabetes, among other things. So running is actually a good bet for your health, despite what you may hear. Additional safety considerations that you need to make a priority is being aware of your surroundings and being a defensive runner. So don't expect traffic to be aware of you or to wait for you. We all know the stats about how many distracted drivers are out on the roads, so make sure that you're aware and alert at all times. You'd be surprised at how many runners don't do some of these basic things. Some important things to do are always run facing traffic. So in the U.S., that'd be the left side of the road, or on a sidewalk, and try to make eye contact with drivers if possible, especially if you're doing something like crossing the road. Wear reflective gear and lights if you're going to be running in low light. And don't block out ambient sounds entirely by wearing headphones. So if you're going to wear, you listen to music or podcasts or audiobooks, some of those bone conduction headphones are really good because it doesn't block your ear canals, or just wear one earbud. Really make sure that you're aware of your surroundings. Now, if you're running on a path that's closed to traffic, run on the right side and pass on the left. This can make sharing the path with cyclists much more easy. And if you're running with friends, don't run more than two abreast. And this goes for races, too. It's really annoying to see like four or five people strung out covering the entire race course, you know, and it's hard to get around them. So try to be considerate of the other traffic out there.
Tell me about it, man. I got to admit, Angie, I ran on the wrong side of the road a little bit yesterday because that's where the shade was.
Oh, dear. It's not worth becoming a road pizza.
And then I was running down this highway and it's pretty busy and there's not much of a shoulder. And as I was running, I startled a pigeon I almost stepped on it. I was that close. Didn't see it. All I know is I took a step and then boom, this bird flies off in a frenzy. Really startled me too, man. I almost like jumped out into the road.
Obviously that pigeon wasn't being aware of their personal surroundings.
So you got to be ready for anything when you're out there.
That's right.
Snakes, pigeons.
Dogs.
I also ran through a nasty spider web. Had like a spider on my face. That was fun. Personal safety. All right. Let's talk about the importance of cross training, number four.
It's very important to incorporate strength training and other low impact exercises. It's really easy to just run because that's what checks the boxes on your training plan or gives you the runner's high. But if you don't build a firm foundation, there's a very good chance that you'll get injured. Maybe not right away, but at some point, if you don't take the necessary precautions, injury probably will come knocking. So to improve your overall muscle strength and help you become a better runner, it's really important to include some cross training, specifically low impact stuff into your training. We recommend things like core training, lifting weights, cycling or spinning, rowing, swimming, yoga, Pilates, things like that. They can really help you get the most bang out of your buck. So your cross training can be done on your off days from running or even doubled up on running days if you have the time. As a beginning marathoner, it's really best to avoid doing high impact activities every single day. This is going to increase your chance of injury and not allow your body necessary rest and recovery. So for your cross training, it's okay to include some high impact interval training, but don't be doing it every single day because it just doesn't give your joints and muscles and bones a chance to rest.
And don't think that you need to do cardio on your cross training days.
That's right. As a runner, a long distance runner, it's really important to build muscle, to have necessary strength. I think cross training routines of even elite runners have changed over the years. You see them lifting heavy weights and doing a lot of different types of exercises just to build an overall healthy and strong body.
Okay, number five, fueling and hydration. We get asked about this quite a bit.
Yes, another important aspect of being prepared for your marathon is dialing in your approach to fueling and hydration. And this is something that you should begin experimenting with and practicing early in your training. So the only new thing that you do on race day is run 26.2 miles. The challenging thing about fueling and hydration is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all formula for success. So I can't just say do A, B, and C and everything is going to be perfect. There's many factors like your body size, your gender, the pace that you're running, the climate that you're training in, and your dietary preferences that are going to factor into your fueling and hydration requirements. Plus, the way that you're going to carry your hydration and fuel during training and also on race day will need to be practiced. So we'll just give you some general recommendations here to provide a jumping off point. Again, this is a topic that could be talked about for days and days because there's so many different ways to go about it. But it's important to start this as soon as you start your training plan. You don't want to wait until the last few weeks and then desperately try to figure out what you're going to do for marathon day.
Exactly.
With your hydration, most runners are going to need between 16 to 28 ounces of fluid per hour during exercise. Now, there are definitely some outliers from this 16 to 28 ounces range, but studies show that regularly consuming over 30 ounces per hour puts you at a significant risk of overhydration or hyponatremia, which is low blood sodium. So you want to avoid overhydrating, but you also don't want to get dehydrated. So the fluids that you take in should be spaced appropriately, like maybe every 1 to 2 miles, take a few ounces in. Otherwise, your gastrointestinal system can't process large amounts of fluid at once, and it will leave you with that sloshing feeling in your gut.
Mm.
So that's no fun, anyone who's ever felt that. For extended efforts and hot or humid conditions, it's wise also to use a balanced electrolyte, either in capsule form or in your hydration of choice. An electrolyte solution that contains a balance of sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium helps ensure the healthy functioning of all your body's systems. So it's not just enough to replace salt because all your electrolytes in your body work in a balance. So make sure that you have a balanced electrolyte solution. There's many different products you can use for this, but definitely do that for longer runs and anything in hot or humid conditions.
Yeah, I meant to take some yesterday and on my humid run. Got to the point where I needed to take them, and I like searched all my pockets of my hydration vest and everywhere, and I must have forgot them in the house before I left.
You're like the poster child of what not to do today.
I know. So that's why we need to go over this stuff, right?
Apparently for our own information as well.
For mine, at least.
When it comes to fueling, the amazing thing about the human body is that we have these fat stores that can kick in during prolonged periods of exercise or fasting or going without meals. But unless you've trained your body to perform in a fasted state, it's going to be necessary to have a steady intake of carbohydrates to allow you to have the physical and mental energy you need to run your best. However, with too much fueling or the wrong formula, you can run into things like nausea and GI distress. So it's really important to practice fueling, see what balances well with your body, see how much you're going to need and how often. Runners can typically process fewer calories per hour because much of the blood supply is shuttled away from your GI system into your major muscle groups. Plus, all the jostling makes it difficult for the gastrointestinal system just to soak up what it needs. So you really don't want to be dumping large amounts of calories in at once. Again, this is something that you kind of want to have the trickle effect of breaking up your fueling needs into increments. In general, most runners are going to need between 120 to 200 calories per hour. Again, divided up in a way that keeps your energy level stable.
And number six, one thing that we always say is don't cram for a marathon.
Yes. Taking shortcuts in this area really undermines the process and often your health. So the first thing that you want to do, even before you think of running a marathon, is to build a solid running base. Now, the type of base that you need is going to depend on your physical fitness level prior to marathon training, prior to becoming a runner. So if you are completely out of shape and haven't exercised in years, you're probably going to need a slower buildup to build a solid running base. If you're already in good shape from other sports and you run occasionally, it may be a shorter amount of time. But you've got to remember that your cardiovascular system, your lungs and your heart, actually gets in shape faster than your muscles, your bones, your tendons, your ligaments, your support systems. So you have to give both systems enough time to build up and stabilize before you put an added workload on them.
Yeah, I remember when I started running about 8 years ago, I totally hated it. It would make my lungs burn. I think running for a minute, and it's not like a full out sprint, but just running at what is probably a normal pace for me, was difficult. So like I mentioned, Angie built me a run walk plan, which had me run for 1 minute, and then walk for three, run for one, walk for three. And then after I could do that comfortably, then we switched where I could run for three, walk for one. And then when I could do that comfortably, I built up to running a mile without stopping, and then 3 miles without stopping. And then I signed up for my first race, which was a 12K. And that was feeling like it was way in deep, right? Over my head. But we ran it together, Angie, and I made it through my first 7 miles at that 12K. Felt amazing. Then I built up to a half marathon using the MTA beginner half marathon plan that we now have. Did a couple half marathons and then took the plunge and trained for my first marathon. After I had my solid running base built, of course.
Yeah, I think the key is you want to start out your training slowly. There's a tendency when we're excited about something and you're seeing progress to start off too hard. So you really want to remember that each person gets in shape at their own rate. So don't compare yourself to maybe someone else who started running at a similar time to you. And also make sure that you find a running schedule that works for you. We typically recommend that beginners run 3 days per week at first and not on consecutive days to allow your body recovery periods and also to use those off days for strength training and other things that are going to build up your body. So remember that your body gets stronger and adapts during periods of rest. So you also have to include the necessary rest for your body to adapt. And it's okay to start with run-walk intervals, like Trevor was talking about, and even to stick with the run-walk method if it works for you during your marathon training. Many people do a run-walk method throughout their entire marathon training and successfully complete their marathons feeling great.
We actually have coaching clients that do run-walk because several of our coaches are really good at helping design run-walk programs for folks. So yeah, no shame in the walking part of it.
That's right. Another important tip while you're building up your running base and beginning your training is not to run too fast during your training runs. Every run should not be attempted harder and faster, especially when you're training for a marathon. It's all about endurance. So you want to maintain a conversational pace as you build up that endurance, especially during your easy and long runs.
And number seven, listen to your body.
Yes, one of the best things about becoming a marathoner is that it gives you a different relationship with your body. You really begin to have a new appreciation of what your body is capable of. And to fully appreciate and support your body, you need to listen to it and intervene when necessary. Now, not everything that your body tells you is going to be something that you have to take action with. But you need to take care of any issues or niggles early on before they turn into bigger problems like injury or overtraining. And also listening to your body includes things like getting the amount of sleep that your body needs. If you haven't found out already, marathoners need more sleep than the average sedentary population. Also fueling your body with foods that lead to muscle growth and decrease inflammation. Listening to your body includes taking regular days off and rolling, icing, soaking any areas of concern. It's also important to seek professional help early if you have a health concern. Doing so is going to give you the best chance of getting to the marathon finish line and, more importantly, being a healthy runner for life.
When it came time to sign up for my first marathon, I felt that my body was ready. I'd run a couple half marathons, so my confidence had grown, but I knew that it would be a huge challenge and probably the toughest thing that I'd ever done. Nevertheless, I took the plunge and signed up and then started training with the just a beginner training plan that you designed for me, running 3 days a week. And I was supposed to be doing cross training in between, which I probably was too lazy and neglected a lot of it. But I remember running like my first 20 miler. Wow, that is a long way to run. That's just epic, you know, when you get up to your first 20 miler. Remember, it like took me all day. Not really, but yeah, just knowing that you ran that far just for the heck of it, you know, just to see what you're made of. Because at that time when I was training for my first marathon, I really was in this weird place in life where I just needed something to redefine myself with. You know, I needed some kind of transformation. I felt kind of stuck in my health and stuck, you know, and where I was at in life. And the marathon became for me like a catalyst for bringing a lot of change in life and more focus and discipline and just confidence.
Yeah, I think one of the things that attracts people to long distance running and the marathon distance is that we all have a desire to live up to our full potential and to get the most out of life. And running is one of those things that connects the body, mind, and spirit in a unique way. We really find out what's inside of us, and at the same time, we connect more fully to our environment. And Trevor, like you said, we've heard from hundreds and hundreds of runners over the years who have confirmed that running a marathon changed their life for the better. But we know, like any big challenge, there's a lot of fear and anxiety that's connected with taking on something like this, whether it's a marathon challenge or any new challenge in your life. It's normal to wonder if you have what it takes and sometimes to doubt that you're taking the necessary steps to reach your marathon goal. So we kind of want to go into some mindset advice that's going to help you.
That's right. We have three more tips to share. But before we do, we want to play a conversation we had with James Latcher from California. He is a fan of the MTA podcast, and he started out at 400 pounds and then went on this weight loss and running journey, and recently this year ran his first marathon. So Angie, talking about, you know, wondering if you have what it takes. I think people like James, you know, who he started out with a lot, way more challenges than I had when I first started, and look what he was able to do. So I know you guys will enjoy this conversation. But before we play that conversation with James, we want to quickly say thanks to this episode's sponsor, Sunbasket. We all know that mindful eating is an essential part of self-care, but sometimes, you know, we get lazy and we don't eat right because we don't want to take the time. Sunbasket, however, makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home, no matter how much experience you have in the kitchen.
That's right. They deliver 18 weekly recipes right to your door, and there are plenty of meal plan options like paleo, gluten-free, vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian, and more. Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafoods. And everything is pre-measured and easy to prep, and you can get a healthy and delicious meal on the table in about 30 minutes.
It's a beautiful thing.
That's right. Just go to sunbasket.com/marathon today and learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/marathon for $35 off.
We'd also like to thank Care Of for sponsoring this episode. Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. Just take one of their fun online quizzes, which will ask you about your diet, your health goals, your lifestyle choices, and find out in 5 minutes what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. They'll get delivered right to your door in a personalized, easy-to-remember daily pack. And by the way, the packs are perfect for like an on-the-go lifestyle if you need to travel.
That's right. When I got mine, they had my name on them, Angie, and then a little quote of the day. So it was kind of a cool little inspiring thing, really easy to throw in your purse to take with you if you needed. They also have vegan and vegetarian supplement options, and you can modify your subscription at any time. For 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, visit takecareof.com. That's takecareof.com and enter MTA for 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins.
Okay, we're talking now with Academy member James Latcher from California. James, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Excellent. So, first of all, how did you find MTA?
You know, I was just thinking that before you guys called, and I think I just was on my podcast app, and I searched for marathon training, and you guys popped right up because I had just signed up to do the marathon that I just completed. So I'd been listening to you guys for about a year now because I signed up about a year before I did the marathon. Yeah.
That's awesome. So congratulations on finishing your first marathon. That's really exciting. Tell our listeners one that you completed.
I completed the San Luis Obispo Marathon out in California. That's the city I live in now. And that was the seventh version of the marathon they just put on. And that was at the end of April.
So your hometown race, I'm sure that was pretty special.
Well, I kind of planned it that way because I wanted to get my friends out there and my coworkers and have all the support I could get because, as you know, completing a marathon's kind of a big deal and you need as much support and from your friends and family as you can get.
Yeah, that's really smart. Now, you know, one of the reasons we're talking to you is because you haven't always been in marathon shape. In fact, just a couple short years ago, you weighed 400 pounds. So take us back to what it was like to weigh 400 pounds. What was that like on a daily basis?
Well, you know, the weight kind of comes on slowly over the years in my 20s and 30s. And when you think about it, you only have to gain about 5 or 10 pounds over 20 years. And next thing you know, you're pretty heavy. Being that weight, you're basically just kind of tired and sick most of the time. And I went through some depression some years in there, and you're just, in general, not too happy. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I was, you know, sad all the time, but, you know, you took joy in eating instead of living. So, yeah, I was just kind of living the days out. That was my sort of attitude towards life. When I turned 40, I was around 400 pounds, and I thought, well, I'll live maybe 20 more years, and I'll just eat a bunch of buffets and Ben and Jerry's and have some fun with friends, and that'll be it, you know?
So back then, did you ever imagine that you'd run a marathon?
I never even thought about running in general, to be honest. So when I was a kid, I played Little League, and I was relatively active. I was an average kid. But then once I graduated high school and went to college, I started gaining weight, and I became less and less active. I was never even a runner back in high school or anything. I mean, I ran around the track for gym class or whatever, but I never really even liked running because as I got heavier, it got harder to even walk. And I developed gout and neuropathy in my feet. So I never even thought I'd be able to walk long distances, much less run long distances. So the running thing really didn't even start until I lost about 170 pounds or so.
So you mentioned turning 40. And was there kind of like a gradual mindset shift where you realized something had to change? Or did you kind of have one of those rock bottom moments? Or what was going on in your mind?
Well, when I moved out here to San Luis Obispo, I got a job at the county bus system. And I hadn't had healthcare coverage in a long time. And I was always kind of curious about weight loss surgery. And when I realized that my coverage offered it, I began the process of getting it. So I guess that was the big shift because when I got over 300 pounds and then eventually 400 pounds, I kind of lost hope because losing you know, hundreds of pounds is such a daunting task. And I had tried so many times before and I thought, well, I'm never going to lose that much weight. Why even bother? You know, like so many people, you get started and then you eventually slip up and then you just go back to your old habits. So, but I thought if I got this surgery, maybe I'll have a fighting chance, maybe with a smaller stomach. And if I just commit to myself, I could actually kind of get to a decent weight. My initial goal was just to get below 300 pounds because that would have still been 100 pound weight loss. So I thought that would be great. So basically when I got the health insurance, that's what sort of shifted my mindset into maybe turning my health around.
So it kind of opened up a whole new set of possibilities for you.
Right. It was kind of a pipe dream in the beginning because it was a very long process to get the surgery. It was about a year and a half. So the whole time I kept thinking, well, it's not going to happen. I'll keep trying, but if it doesn't happen, whatever. But as it got closer to actually happening, I started getting more serious about learning about nutrition and trying to make changes. And then when I finally met the surgeon, that's when it kind of hit me like, wait, this is really happening. I really kind of need to get my act together and figure out how to do this if I want to be successful.
So what was that like? I mean, do you mind sharing how the surgery turned out? What were the results?
Yeah, so I met the surgeon in January 2015. I met the team at the hospital, and they basically, I don't know if you're familiar, but typically they want you to lose some weight right before the surgery because that makes the surgery a little bit easier as far as having less fat around your liver and around that area. So I lost about 35 pounds right before surgery in the 2 months before surgery. I just basically started walking and I cut out sugar and cut down on the junk food. And then I had surgery in March of 2015 and it went really well. I mean, there's your usual complications. You have constipation, you have some nausea. You know, obviously you can't eat very much in the beginning. You're on liquid diet for a couple weeks. But I really kind of wanted to take advantage of my opportunity, and I lost a lot of weight quickly. I lost about 165 pounds in the first year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You were on fire.
Right. I kept avoiding the sugars for the most part, you know, the added sugars. I mean, I still eat fruit and things like that.
Sure.
But another thing that's nice about living in this town, there's no drive-thrus. There's actually like a regulation against food establishments having a drive-through. So I couldn't even go through a drive-through, which I used to always go through, you know, in places I did before. So that first year, things went pretty smoothly. But after about 9 to 12 months, people tend to kind of stall out a little bit. And then you really have to buckle down if you want to keep losing. After about a year, I kind of hovered around 220, 230. And then towards the end of 2016, I developed shingles. And that laid me up for a little while. And my doctor didn't want me exercising because I developed an infection in my leg.
Mm.
I gained a few pounds. And I realized, you know, this is the classic sort of weight regain that I heard about a lot of weight loss surgery patients having. And I thought to myself, you know, when I'm able to exercise, I want to get back to this and I want to kind of get back in shape, so to speak. I mean, I was in a lot better shape already, but I didn't want to keep regaining, you know. So after the shingles, I started walking more and really kind of tightened up my diet. And then I started losing weight pretty steadily for about 8 months. I lost about a pound a week. It just kind of melted away really slow and steady. And then that's when I started running towards the end of 2016, probably around November or so.
So you got to the point where your body was obviously feeling a lot lighter. And with the walking, that you kind of felt like you had the confidence to, you know, to take it to the next level of running.
Right. About a year earlier, I'd kind of messed around with running a little bit, like quarter of a mile here and there. I remember on New Year's Day 2016, I had this big goal of running a mile in less than 10 minutes, like 1 mile around the track. And I did it. And I remember literally passing out on the grass and the track and thinking I was about to die.
But
I got under 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So that was January 1st, 2016, right? So, but then, you know, at the end of 2016, I started getting into it more. And then one day I decided, I wonder if I could run a 5K just without stopping, you know, not worrying about time or anything, just without walking or stopping. And I did it. And then that's when I got together with my girlfriend. I'm like, hey, maybe I should do a 5K. Maybe I should just sign up for a race.
Right.
And that's when we signed up for my first race. And that was in February of 2017.
When did you decide to run a marathon?
So that first race was in Ventura, one of the best experiences of my life because, you know, I tell people this all the time. That's when I realized what this whole running community is all about. There's so much positive energy there. So many people just wanting to be healthy and supporting each other. I broke 35 minutes and I was ecstatic and I ran the whole way and I thought, I want to do another one of these. So I found the next race, which happened to be on my birthday, and it was another 5K in March of 2017. And then I found another 5K, which was, there's a 5K attached to the slow marathon, San Luis Obispo, we call it so, the slow marathon every year. That's the Saturday before the marathon. So I did that one last year. And then they have a flash sale where if you sign up a year in advance, you save a lot of money on your registration for the next year. So I said to myself, well, I'm going to go ahead and sign up for this. You know, a year from now, if I keep progressing, I should be able to do this.
Wow. So that took a lot of faith.
Yeah. So the 5K had been the longest run I'd done at that time. But I set a long-term goal of doing a marathon. And I just gradually kept increasing my distance and increasing the races I did. So I did a handful of 10Ks. I did a half marathon. I even did a 20-mile race. And I just kept working up. And like I mentioned to you in a message, I joined the academy and then I downloaded one of your training plans. I followed the plan as best I could. And, you know, it helped me complete the marathon. So I started that in January this year. It was nice because it was right at the turn of the year and it led up to the marathon at the end of April.
And how did the marathon go? What was your finishing time?
My finishing time was 5 hours, 24 minutes and 19 seconds.
Right on. How did you feel at the finish?
It was pretty awesome. You know, one of the ideas I'd gotten from your podcast was to think about people at each mile. So I wrote down like 26 different people, and there are more people than I could fit, so I had to combine some people. But, you know, each mile I thought about somebody, and that last 0.2 mile I thought about my cat that I love, and because she's small. So I had somebody to think about it, and that inspires you. Like, it kind of gives you a little boost every time you pass that mile marker. You get to think about somebody in your life that has supported you and that you love. And it's really kind of a cool thing. So the whole race, you know, people have asked me since, like, were you nervous? Did you ever feel like you couldn't finish? And, you know, I wasn't nervous at all. Like, I felt like I had so much support and love on my side from my friends and the running community that, you know, regardless of being 400 pounds a few years ago, I was going to finish. Hmm. And it was probably top 5 days of my life.
Wow.
That's exciting. Well, I have to say that you really set yourself up for success well, because, you know, you went about training in a smart way. You know, didn't rush into the process. And then, like you said, you talked about how your mindset was that you wanted to finish strong and healthy and really fully soak in and enjoy that first marathon experience and enjoy the support system that you had around you. So that's really amazing.
Yeah. And another thing that I got from your guys' podcast was, you know, the cross training and doing like those little things. I did a lot of weight work, a lot of bicycling. You know, I made sure I had my rest days in there too. I mean, I didn't have any blisters. I didn't have like chafing. I cramped up a little bit around mile 19, so I had to slow down a little bit, but it wasn't too bad. And considering it was my first marathon, I mean, people at the end looked at me like, aren't you tired? Aren't you about to pass out? And I was just so happy. You know, my cardiovascular levels and my breathing, my lungs were so strong by that point that I wasn't really that tired. I probably could have went another 5 miles. I joked with a friend, like, I could do an ultra right now if there were 5 more miles left on the course.
That means you pace smart.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, things couldn't have gone better. All those horror stories you see, I went on YouTube and looked at all of the mistakes you should avoid for your first marathon. And I heard and I saw all these stories of people having bad experiences or things they regret. And none of that happened to me.
You plan on doing some more marathons?
Oh, yeah. I'm signed up for the Sacramento Marathon in December. So I got a lot of races on the calendar already. I'm doing a 5K here in next week. So, Yeah, I definitely want to do this for 10, 20, maybe 30 more years. I'm 46 years old.
Well, you got mad time.
I could,
that's right.
Yeah, I could totally see myself doing this for a while. The race I just did, that slow marathon, they found out about my story because it was in the local newspaper. It was the front page story of the day.
Yeah.
And they made me a race ambassador. So
awesome.
You know, I'm sort of in my 15 minutes of fame here, but I'm definitely enjoying it. I don't want it to go to my head, but I want to spread the word and try to inspire some people that you could be really big. I mean, obviously I had a lot of help with the surgery, but you can change your life around and don't be afraid of running. I mean, I thought I'd have all those type of knee problems and foot problems too, but if you kind of take it slow and build your way up, you can accomplish big things.
Yeah, definitely. Well said. Well, congrats, James, on your amazing transformation and completing your first marathon and all the momentum that you have now. I know this is going to inspire a lot of folks that are listening. Well, great talking to you, James.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on.
Big thanks to James for letting us debrief him about his first marathon there in San Luis Obispo, California. It sounds like he's really on a roll now. You know, he's got his life back, his health. I mean, there's no looking back. He's just eager to run more races. He actually has signed up for the MTA virtual half too, which will be in November. So yeah, I just love to see people and talk to people who are just rocking and rolling, especially after overcoming so much.
That's right.
Well, before we get into the last three tips / points, I don't know what we're calling them, in the 10 points that we began with, how to successfully take yourself from couch to marathon, we'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Finn. Instead of continuing to do things by yourself, try getting some help with an assistant like Finn. Like the best assistants, Finn knows your preferences, remembers the people you interact with, and integrates with your email and calendar. Finn can make calls, send emails on your behalf, pay bills, remember important dates, and automatically get things done for you. In fact, I used it to find a hotel room in Zurich because I'll be flying into Zurich, Switzerland for the Jungfrau Marathon. And instead of like bothering with finding a hotel and comparing hotels close to the airport, I just kicked it over to Finn and they're doing it for me. So
that's awesome.
It's great for people that love to delegate like me.
And if you're someone who doesn't have 40 hours a week for a personal assistant, the best part is that Finn is always available on demand and you only pay for what you use.
That's right. So once you try Finn, I know you're going to love it. And as a listener to this podcast, you can try it for free. Just go to finn.com/MTA. That's finn.com/MTA to try it for free. And we'd also like to thank our friends at New Knee for sponsoring this episode. They exist to help runners deal with knee pain. If you have been struggling with knee pain during your runs, we know how bad it sucks, really. The creator of New Knee, Mike Emmerling, had his own 5-year struggle with runner's knee and tried various treatments, including compression sleeves and knee straps. But when it came to it, nothing allowed him to run without knee pain. So he came up with his own solution. I think he's an engineer by training. And his solution is based on the research that he did, research that reveals that if you relieve the pressure, you relieve the pain. So that is what New Knee does. It relieves the pressure on your patella so it glides smoothly on the bone underneath it. And it provides instant relief from runner's knee pain and allows you to run pain-free.
In fact, today Mike receives weekly emails from runners like Sarah who said, "It's wonderful. I'm back to running and I couldn't be happier." So you can stop runner's knee in its tracks by going to newkneeshop.com. That's N-U-N-E-E shop.com. And you can use code MTA25 for a 25% discount. And as a bonus, we're going to include the Resilient Runner, your guide to injury-free running.
Once again, that's newkneeshop.com and use MTA25 for a 25% discount. We've talked about a lot of good things, you know, listening to your body, the proper amount of running days, building your base, fueling, hydration, safety. But one of the most important topics is mindset, you know, and mental toughness. The last 3 points in our 10 points here have to do with mental toughness in some way, don't they, Angie?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's really important to examine your motivation for running in the first place and also for doing the marathon. Your why is going to be really important as you start to deal with the challenges of training, because I don't think I've heard from anyone who hasn't had some sort of issue or challenge coming up as they train for a marathon, whether it's scheduling concerns, finding the time to run, sickness, injury, there's just a huge variety of things that can come up. And so having the right why can really help you get through those and overcome those challenges when some people just end up giving up. Some of the common reasons why people want to run a marathon include things like challenging themselves to lose weight, to have more energy, to get into better shape, to fulfill a bucket list item, maybe to better keep up with their kids, or sometimes even because of pressure from other people. And there's some of these that are good motivations and some that may get you going in the first place but won't be reasons to keep you going. So research shows that things like running a marathon to lose weight or running a marathon because of pressure from other people are not going to keep you motivated throughout, because what happens if you don't lose weight? Or what happens if that person who you're training with drops out or gets faster than you, or just anything? So it's really got to be something that comes from inside of you. It has to be your own deeply personal why. So starting out by examining your motivation and keeping that in your forefront of your mind is really going to help you when times get tough.
I like the story about George Mallory. Someone asked him, why did you climb Mount Everest? This is way back in the day, one of the earlier, you know, Europeans to climb the mountain. And he said, because it's there.
Well, the marathon is there as well, huh?
I've always thought that a profound enough answer. Like, there's something in the human spirit that wants to overcome and climb a mountain and take on like this monumental task. Life is too short to sit on the couch.
That's right. Or stay at your desk all the time.
So Angie talked about examining your motivation, finding out your why. You know, maybe you're running for others. That's also a great way to get through the miles. You know, James mentioned coming up with 26 people that he dedicated each mile to get through his marathon. That's a smart strategy. Number nine is another important tip. Don't fixate on a time goal at your first marathon.
Or your first half marathon, yes. This is one of the biggest mistakes that I see new marathoners making. They get an idea of an ideal time in their minds. Maybe it's based on other people's first marathon times or a shorter race time that they accomplished, and think, oh, I did a half marathon in X amount of time. Let's just double it and that'll be my marathon time. And instead of trying to focus on running strong and healthy and enjoy the experience, they constantly have this pressure in their minds to beat this certain time. And it can cause a lot of self-doubt. It can actually even cause injury because people push themselves too hard during their training runs. So it's really important to not compare yourself to others. Yes, there are a few people who run their first marathon and qualify for Boston, but that's the exception, not the rule. We've heard from people who really felt disillusioned after their first marathon because they put a lot of pressure on themselves to reach a time goal. And then, you know, there's so much you can't control about the marathon. Something happened and they just kind of walked away with a bitter taste in their mouth, thinking that they were somehow a failure.
You probably ran about 10 or 12 marathons before you qualified for Boston.
Oh, yeah, because I ran my first marathon in 2008 and I didn't qualify for Boston until 2014. So there was like a 6-year process of running many marathons and having a baby in between, and different things that happened in my personal life. So just realize that everyone's on their own journey, and to just treat that first marathon as a celebration of what your body can accomplish. Focus on going the distance. Focus on enjoying the experience, on being strong and healthy, and being proud of yourself no matter what your finishing time is. And realize that if you choose to do another marathon, then that can be a great time to go for a PR or a specific time. But don't put that pressure on yourself at first.
Just remember this, my goal time is a good time.
Yeah, that's right.
And number 10, don't let fear hold you back.
Part of the marathon process is overcoming a lot of fears, whether it's running outside for the first time, whether it's going over a certain amount of mileage. You know, a lot of times, maybe that first 10-mile run or 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, those, they can also, you know, can cause a lot of anxiety and fear in you. Maybe it's running in the winter in different conditions. Maybe it's running in the dark. You know, there's a lot of different fears that we have to overcome as we train for a marathon.
See, that's why I ran in humidity yesterday, Angie.
Okay.
You think I was throwing everything that you taught me out the window, but instead I was channeling my inner George Mallory. Why'd you run in the humidity, Trev? Because it's there. I survived.
And moving toward your fears is one important way to becoming a stronger and more resilient person. We really are capable of more than we think, and we can overcome challenges that sometimes seem really daunting. I see that one thing that often holds people back from training for a marathon in the first place is that they don't see themselves as a runner. We often get a really specific idea in our heads about what a runner looks like.
But if you go out to a race and you look at the body types that are there, the people that look like an elite runner, like a Shalane Flanagan, they're all at the front of the pack. And then the people that just look like the rest of us are out there, you know, in the middle of the pack. And maybe some of them are in the front, but just mid-packers, back of the packers, just all shapes and sizes. People that are going to be in better shape than you, people that are going to be in worse shape than you. In fact, Angie, I said that I'm a little bit nervous to go and do this marathon in Switzerland because I feel like my training has not been that thorough as we've been traveling a lot this summer. I've been doing a lot of sitting and driving. I haven't had like a proper buildup. And you said, I'm sure you won't be the slowest one there. But even if I was the slowest one there, as long as I can make it before the cutoff, I'll be happy.
Yeah, that's right. Even for the person who finishes dead last in a race, I mean, they're still beating everyone who stayed home or who didn't even have the guts to sign up for the race.
It's true. So we've heard from a few people who finished DFL, dead freaking last.
Yeah, that's right. So it's really important to let go of your preconceived ideas of who a real runner or who a real marathoner is and just embrace your own personal identity as a runner. If you run, you're a runner. It doesn't matter how often you run, how far you run, or how fast you run. And as you embrace your identity as a runner, that'll help you embrace your identity as a marathoner.
Right on. So, Angie, there was a really great question that was asked recently that I think it goes well with what you talked about in this episode. The question was from Mickey, and she says, I'm looking for words of wisdom. I'm training for my first marathon, which will be the New York City Marathon, and I find I've been walking more than I would like on my long runs. I think I need to work on my mental strength. Are there any good mantras or books you can recommend? P.S. I have my first 16-mile run coming this Saturday, and I'm pretty nervous.
Well, I remember being nervous before my first 16-miler, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that was the one where I did the run after lunch, and I ate too close to it, and I ended up throwing up, and it was not my best run. But
it was a good learning experience.
It was a good learning experience, and I continued on and had a successful marathon. So even a rough long run doesn't mean that all is lost.
Well, we have a lot of wise people in the group. So these are some great responses to Mickey's question. So Angie's going to read through some of these.
Nick says, Finding Ultra by Rich Roll was a game changer for me. I regularly remind myself, if he could do all he did in his 40s, I can certainly run just one little marathon. Adolfo said, I read A Race Like No Other before I ran New York City last year. It's not about mental strength, but about the race, mile by mile. That helped me visualize my training for this specific run. Maybe it will assist you in setting up your frame of mind.
Okay, so that book was called A Race Like No Other, and it's about the New York City Marathon.
Yeah, the author goes mile by mile and has a story for each one.
That's awesome.
So it kind of specifically focused on the New York City Marathon and probably very helpful for people who are training for it. Marianne says, for me, it really helped when I realized that whenever I continued to run, when I really, really wanted to walk, it was part of my mental training and just as important as the miles in itself, as there will be many times in the marathon when you really want to walk. Don't be too hard on yourself, though. If you typically start taking walk breaks after 7 minutes, see if you can make it to 8 and continue to build from this. Having said this, be aware that you might be running too fast in the beginning, requiring later walk breaks. You might want to simply start out slower and see if this helps your need to walk later on.
Yeah, good advice, because it's really tempting to go out too fast.
That's right. Winnie says, I'm a fan of taking walk breaks, but I've worked on slowing my pace in the early miles, and I find I walk less in the later miles. I also at times do the Galloway run, walk, run method. She says, also, I hear the crowds and cheering at the New York City Marathon carries you. Should be the experience of a lifetime. Coach Athena says, remember your why. And that really ties into our podcast. She says, whether it's your health, starting and finishing a goal, your children, a loved one, etc. Put that front and center and amazing things happen. Jamie says, I trained for New York City as my first marathon too. I did plenty of walking and even laid down on the path a few times.
Oh, no.
I never finished a run longer than 15 miles without stopping. New York City was so exciting that it will carry you. I never stopped once and was happy with my finish time. So you've got this. Just stick to the training. I'm sure this book has been mentioned, but Let Your Mind Run by Dina Castor is excellent.
Yeah, that is a great book because it goes into so much, you know, Dina's mindset and her optimism.
Yeah, one of the things that she said in her book, which has been a great mantra that stuck with me, is to bring a good attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it's easy to like start dreading a long run far in advance of it happening, or even other things in life. You can just start dreading it and letting this kind of heavy cloud of doubt and anxiety settle over you. But if you simply just try to shake it off and just bring a good attitude, realize that you just have to do the best you can at any given time, it can really help. So that's one thing I like to remind myself of. Tom says, the book, How Bad Do You Want It, was great. It's specific principles with great real-life anecdotes to demonstrate each one. Definitely tangible things to think about improving on.
How bad do you want it?
Good question, right? Sarah says, I enjoyed the book The Long Run by Matt Long. I tend to use the Galloway method as I'm training for my first marathon, and it's helped me a lot. But on the days I walk more, I try to tell myself, I am strong, I am a runner. Which is what I seem to find I convince myself I'm not when I start to walk so much. So it counteracts the negative on most days. Vicky says, I ran my first marathon in New York City last year. It was amazing and changed my life. Whenever you want to give up or slow down, think hard why you want to do the race and trust all your training that you've done up to this point. You will know in your head that you can do it. On race day, you can draw your energy from the wonderful crowds in New York City. You will feel like a rock star. Visualize millions of people shouting your name and cheering for you. I put my name in tape in big letters on race day, and tons of people cheered for me.
It is interesting to have people say your name to you as you're running by. Like, hey, good job, Trevor. I'm like, how does he? Oh, yeah. And if you're going to do a race that's smaller, you can draw energy from other places, you know, from the scenery, perhaps, or just take along a really good playlist and draw energy from the music. You know, the temptation to walk is a very strong temptation, though. I definitely feel that after, you know, the first 16 miles in a marathon. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and take a short walk break, like when I'm going through an aid station or maybe going uphill. But then I'll tell myself I'm going to run all the downhills, all the flats, or I'll just pick a point. And I'll say, okay, I'm not going to walk till I get to that next mile marker. So setting those little goals, giving myself permission to walk, but only after I get to that certain point. And resist the temptation to sit down because it'll be hard to get up again.
Whatever you do, keep moving forward.
Yes, always.
It's a great metaphor for life.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for being a listener. Of course, you can get all of our training plans, courses, and resources inside the Academy. You can learn more when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. We always love to hear from you. We have a contact form on our website. You can also message us through Facebook and the other channels that we're on. We appreciate all you guys for tuning in. Until the next time, keep taking action toward your goals. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. Oh, wait.